Good evening and welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Mask, mothers and fathers aligned, saving kids, kids of all ages and all stages for all mental health struggles. If you know somebody that needs a referral for a therapist, an inpatient or outpatient program, please give us a call, 718-758-0400. I'll repeat the number. You may want to jot it down for yourself, a loved one, a neighbor, or someone you usually sit next to in shul. We also have available still Zoom parenting groups. So give us a call. All calls are kept strictly confidential. 718-758-0400. Tonight, I'm very honored to have on with us a colleague, somebody that has really been working for so many years, I would say probably over two decades, with Yeshiva Day Schools, with parents closely, and that is Dr. Aryeh Berlin, who's a licensed clinical psychologist. And he is in New Jersey, but also in Muncie, and works by telehealth, servicing families around the country. So I would like to welcome you on tonight. How are you, Dr. Berlin? Thank you for making the time to come on.
Mr. Klabin, thank you very much for that warm introduction. And also just, thank you on behalf of everybody for everything Mask does. I know you have the support groups, which are widely known in the parenting classes, as well as the referrals and of course your famous helpline. So really, you and your staff have been helping people also for decades. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm glad you thank my staff because, yes, it's not a one-man show here. We have people that are available from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. We are available to take your calls on the helpline. So, Dr. Berlin, we've had so many shows recently. We're speaking about anxiety in children, in adults, and times have been so difficult coming out of COVID, going into the world war now in Israel, and what's going on around the world in general, in the colleges, everywhere, young adults are. They're facing some situations that are really causing them to have a lot of anxiety. So I'd like to ask you first, if you can just explain to my listeners the difference between normal childhood fears and anxiety disorders in children, please.
So that's a very good question and a very important question because it's important to recognize that certain levels and some levels of anxiety are normal and expected. So, our brains and our bodies are designed to protect us. And we have an entire neurological system, which is seeking out threats and looking for any danger in the environment. So, when you have a child, let's say, that's going to a new class or a new caregiver, and they're nervous, that is a normal, a developmentally normal and expected response. When you get to a point where a child has excessive anxiety, it's persistent, and it's chronic, and it's also disproportionate. So you have a child that even small things that may be some make regular or normal developing children somewhat nervous. It makes them very, very nervous. They have extreme distress, and they develop avoidance behaviors, which interferes with their lives. That's when you start to have anxiety disorders. Another common symptom, especially with children, is to feel some physiological responses, stomach aches and headaches in response to fears.
So you say about stomach aches and headaches. you know, a parent can have a child that just over and over go over and over again says, I don't want to go to school, I have a headache, I have a stomach ache. What are the responses that the parents should have to that child when they're very young? And do you recommend a different response when they're a teenager?
Also a very important question. There's a tremendous amount of pediatric anxiety research right now addressing this very question. What is the most effective response that parents can have, you know, to their children in these anxiety provoking situations? So first of all, one of the largest and most important parts of the response is validation. And this is something that a lot of people confuse. Validation does not mean that I'm agreeing with you. You know, so if the child is very, very nervous about going to school, you know, to use your example. So you validate the child that I recognize how difficult this is. You know, it seems like you feel like, you know, you're having a stomach ache and you had a hard time sleeping last night, or you're feeling, you know, sweaty, or you have a headache. And I understand how difficult and how scary this seems. Now, the important thing is that the parent doesn't agree with the child that the situation that they're about to get themselves into is as scary and as dangerous as the child's, you know, threat system is telling them. So the next step of it is, so the parents validate the child response, and they tell the child that because of the fact that mommy and tati know that this is something that you can really do, and even though your body is so nervous and it's telling you how nervous you are and how dangerous this is, we know that this is okay and it's safe and you're going to do it anyway. And the child has to do it, because then if once you allow or start negotiating with the child and really with their anxiety, you start getting into much bigger problems.
So there are, I'm sure you can share, key risk factors that could contribute to, you know, the development of anxiety in children. Can you share that, please?
Sure. So there's a genetic component.
Yeah.
Families with, you know, children that come from a family with a history of anxiety disorders, just environmental stresses. So children, you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of Jewish children right now that are, you know, being exposed to extreme and chronic stress and trauma. Certain parental behaviors, which we were just discussing, such as, you know, overprotective parenting, or parents themselves that don't model effective responses to stress and anxiety also tend to contribute to, you know, the child's development of anxiety. And there's also, you know, if there's personality factors, and if the child had any specific exposure to trauma, he's also more likely to develop anxiety later in life.
So, Dr. Berlin, with everything going on social media and so many kids having a phone, and parents' reactions when they're on social media in front of their children and seeing so many different lies and things that are coming in from the war in Israel, it's so important that they actually say, I won't watch this video because I don't want it to cause me anxiety. Isn't that so?
Yes.
Be helpful.
Yes. Yes. I mean, there's the little benefit, right, to people. People know what's going on. It's over excessive exposure to stress that's unnecessary and not beneficial. And it does affect people, and it affects their children as well. Along that same line, I think it's important to note that people need to realize that their children, unfortunately, are possibly or even likely exposed to a lot more than what their parents believe they may be exposed to right now. So parents are trying to protect their children, but, you know, there are other kids in school that may have been exposed to something, or they may have had a sibling that told them something. And these children are stressed out by it. And what do? They go to school and they tell their peers. And you know, people's children, even though they're protecting them from social media, they may be exposed to it in different ways, despite that attempt.
Yes. So let's talk now more about untreated pediatric anxiety. What are the long-term consequences if a school calls a parent and says, no, we think it's a good idea you have your second grader, your fourth grader be evaluated. Something seems to be off. She has a lot of anxiety. Lots of times parents don't want to get that phone call and hear it. And they don't take it serious. And then it just, you know, little kids, little problems, big kids, big problems. It can, as they get older in school, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade, and going into high school, there are so many long-term consequences by not addressing it when they're younger. So can you talk a little bit on that topic, please?
Sure. So what we know about untreated pediatric anxiety is that, and this is an obvious one, that it continues into adulthood, right? So left untreated, it'll persist into adolescence, and then it'll go into adulthood as well. And as it continues through the child's development into their adolescent and then adult years, it tends to get more complicated, more challenging, and more persistent. Just as far as like specific impairments, you know, while a child is developing and they have this anxiety, there tend to be a lot of different major areas of development that they miss out on. So if a child has, let's say, social anxiety and they're not interacting confidently with their peers, they will avoid, you know, those situations. They'll cry and they'll maybe successfully avoid, you know, going to birthday parties or to shul or to other social engagements, and they're missing out on regular, you know, social development that children need to be exposed to. There's academic forms of anxiety, whether or not it's perfectionism or test taking. A lot of children, you know, another way that it manifests in school is with concentration difficulties. So if a child has excessive worry and, you know, let's say something happens in the morning at home, or there's something they heard about on the news, or just some other stressor, it's going to be hard for them to concentrate in class. And even if they're bright and they're intelligent, they're not going to be fully with it. Their brain is processing something that they think is much more important than what the teacher is teaching. It tends to have effects on self-esteem. Like we discussed earlier, there's a physical health impact, sleep disturbances and stomach aches. And as a child develops into teenage years, they unfortunately oftentimes, or not oftentimes, but sometimes will look for substances or other things that will help them with their anxiety besides therapy. So, you know, we know, for example, that alcohol and marijuana are both short-term, you know, they calm a person down. And I've actually, you know, I've heard this from people, you know, directly from people that I've seen, that, you know, until their teenage years, they were suffering with a lot, you know, with a lot of different struggles. And somebody, you know, they joined a peer group that also was suffering in different ways. And somebody, you know, for the first time introduced them to alcohol or to marijuana. And their initial and their first experience is that, wow, this is really the answer to everything I've been looking for my entire life. Because it calms them down, and for, you know, while they're high, or while they're, you know, they're high from marijuana, or they're a little bit drunk or excessively drunk, they feel more calm and they feel more relaxed and they feel more themselves, sometimes for the first time that they can ever recall in their entire lives.
But that doesn't last long with marijuana, because when the marijuana doesn't work any longer, they want something a bit stronger. And that's where the addiction piece rolls in.
That's correct. Yes. And then it just spirals out of control.
Right. So when we're talking about spiraling out of control, doctor, I know that you have been you know, working with pediatric psychiatric hospitals. And I'd like you to explain how somebody with an underlying gene of anxiety, whatever, how taking marijuana, what can happen. This isn't a show about addiction in any way, but we just want to touch on the topic, excessive use of marijuana with possibly a bipolar gene, anxiety gene, whatever it may be. What can it spiral into, please?
So what we've seen happen is that when a person starts using illegal substances to help them with other chronic issues that they're struggling with. They're missing out on regular development in other areas. So let's, you know, it's normal development for people to struggle with some mild anxiety and learn to overcome it, or for people to have stress related to school or even family dynamics. These are all regular aspects of a child's development, and it's healthy. Through those exposures and those experiences, the child is strengthening their ability to tolerate, to cope, to be able to function, you know, as an adult. What happens when a child starts using these substances to help them cope, their developmental growth stops at that point. So let's say we have a boy that's 14, 15 years old, and he starts using substances, and that's how he's coping with difficulties at home, or not fitting in yeshiva, or academic struggles, or social struggles. And then we've seen this, actually. I worked in addictions also. I know we're not going into that area, but let's say we have a child that started at 13, 14, and they were abusing substances till they were 20 years old. When they finally get treatment and hopefully are successful, their brains and their level of development is still at the 13, 14 year old level. So they have bigger issues at that point, because they're out of the school environment, and they're supposed to be either in a higher level yeshiva or working in jobs, or starting to, you know, emerge into adulthood and consider marriage partners, but they're still functioning as a young adolescent.
So, doctor, let's talk about effective treatment strategies for pediatric anxiety and how they're different from adult treatment, please.
So there are a few different things, and they all, you know, all of them can be used, and they most effectively can be used collaboratively. So there is, sometimes it's necessary for a child, and this is not the first line approach, but I'm going to start with it. So sometimes medication is necessary. It really depends on the level of the child's impairment at that point, measured by the frequency of their anxiety and the intensity of their emotional response, and also how long it lasts. There are some kids, you know, that come to us, and as a psychologist, you know, they're at a level of functioning that demands a medication. You know, we have kids that aren't going to school, or just shut down, or just have meltdowns on a very frequent basis, and they're not even available for therapeutic intervention. The second part of treatments is therapeutic intervention, which would be individual treatments. And, you know, just working with the child to understand how their stress response works, understanding, depending on the child's age, but their body's physiological response to anxiety, right? So when you're dealing with younger children, they don't have the capacity to really tap into what's going on in their minds. But you can teach them to realize that when you start getting this stomach ache, or you start feeling yourself sweat, or your head starts hurting, or you feel like you're spinning, then you're getting into a more vulnerable spot, and anxiety is likely to start. And then you teach them how to calm themselves down, to hopefully slow down the process, and also various coping skills. Another component here, which is equally as important, is parenting. There's a huge parenting component, which we discussed earlier, about how parents respond to their child's anxiety. And also there's a whole nother area that research is looking at that they call accommodations. And accommodations essentially are what are ways that parents are dancing around their child's anxiety. So common examples include, you know, if a child is having anxiety around school, they'll tell the child, you can call us from the nurse's office, you know, every hour. Or if you're scared of your fourth period teacher, we'll pick you up before that class. And that's what happens is that, you know, that's an effective response initially, because it gets the child to school. But then that child's nervous brain, the amygdala, you know, that little monster that's telling them all these scary things, starts to get reinforced and say, you see, even your parents realize that this is scary. And that's why there's a very big parenting component here, just really thoroughly exploring all the different accommodations and how the parents respond, and slowly pulling them away. I want to just note that there's one characteristic of treatment that really always stands out as the most effective and the most important, and that is exposure. And what I mean by exposure is that having the child do what they're nervous about doing really overrides everything else. Because what ends up happening is that as you expose the child, you know, to going to school or to going to birthday parties or to, you know, taking tests that they're nervous about, it breaks down that reinforcement and that development of the anxious brain, because you see that you got through it and you were successful and you were okay. And it has to be done in a clinical environment in the proper way. You can't just, you know, drop a child off and leave them at school when they haven't been going to school for a long time because of anxiety. There is a hierarchy that's developed, you know, through professionals. It's a system.
Thank you. And it is so important now to just remind everyone that our MASC parent support groups, we recommend always that you start with the parents. So the MASC groups are Sunday night. Shia Krause facilitates a group for blended families. Monday night, Dr. Ackerman, Debbie Ackerman. Tuesday night, Dr. Shmuel Brachfeld. And Wednesday night, Rabbi Dr. Ben-Sion Tversky facilitate groups. Call the MASC helpline. We can send you the link. And it is at 8:30 p.m. We also have Cheryl Friedman Wednesday night in the Five Towns. So anyone that wants to get the link, please call 718-758-0400. And anyone that wants to speak to Dr. Berlin, please call MASC and we will be sure to have Dr. Berlin reach out to you. Doctor, let's talk about what advice do you have for parents who may be struggling in between work and family and life and everything going on in the world, and they have to support their anxious child?
Great question. So it's important, first of all, for the parents to learn to tolerate their own distress and anxiety. A lot of times, as we discussed, this runs in families. And the parents really need to be fully available in helping their child that's struggling with anxiety. One of the most important parenting aspects is being proactive. A lot of times we're reactive. You know, in the morning, the child doesn't want to go to school or they don't want to engage in something. And it's very, very frustrating. People are harried. They need to get to work. They have other children that they're trying to get ready. A much more effective approach is to start with this process well before, you know, that morning and have a plan in place, you know, with that child that the child is committed to. Sometimes, depending on their age, it's necessary to have a prize component or some other behavioral system in place, and just enacting that system, you know, in the morning. So the child is working in individual therapy on their specific coping mechanisms. The parents are working on the parenting, and you have a behavioral component, which is set into motion in those type of situations.
Thank you. Doctor, we're running out of time, but I wanted to know if you can share some self-help resources and books you may recommend for parents and caregivers of anxious children.
Yes. So a parenting book that I'm a big fan of is called Breaking Free of Child Anxiety and OCD, written by Ellie Leibowitz, who's a researcher at Yale. And then there's another book, very well known, by an author named Dawn Huebner. It's called What to Do When You Worry Too Much. And that's a workbook that parents can do with their children to help them with anxiety. And a lot of the coping skills there are very similar to what they would be doing in individual therapy.
So what words of encouragement would you like to offer to the parents that are listening tonight?
Anxiety is very treatable. You know, there's a lot of great research specifically around cognitive behavioral therapy and parenting techniques. And really, 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 just because a child is struggling with anxiety, regardless of how intense it is and how hopeless it seems to be, you know, based on their behavior and how much they avoid and how impaired they are, treatment really is effective. I've seen it, research shows it, and it's really something that can be, your child can successfully navigate through.
So thank you so much, Dr. Berlin, for coming on tonight. Such important information you shared, and I hope to have you on again soon.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful speaking with you. And keep up the good work.
Thank you. And just want everyone to know that Dr. Berlin does do telehealth around the country. Give us a call at 718-758-0400 so we can connect you with Dr. Berlin if you have a young child that is struggling with anxiety. Parenting is number one. We always start with parenting, and Dr. Berlin encourages that parents first get the help that they need for parenting a child with anxiety. So I want to wish everyone a very good evening, beautiful Shabbos, and always remember, hang in, hold on, and virtually still hug tight. Tonight's show is an honor and refuah shlema for all the chayalim and chayalot. Am Yisrael Chai. Thank you and have a good night. Please consider to go online to maskparents.org and donate so that we could continue with all our mask programs. Thank you.